So in this section is your zazen, is the zazen of the Buddhas. And it starts, my teacher Yasutani Roshi is also very well known, maybe late 1900s, early 20th century, 21st century, 20th century. Would say when you do shikantaza, you have faith. This faith has a particular connotation. The faith is the sense that you can actually do shikantaza. While working on koans, have faith in the koans. The fact that you can take care of the koan. Have faith in the fact that your zazen is the zazen of the Buddhas and ancestors. You don't need to worry about anything. Just sit and appreciate that your zazen is Buddha's zazen. Which Buddha? Shakyamuni Buddha is good enough. The Buddhas and ancestors are okay. In other words, it is not you that is sitting, but Buddha. The direct and clear fact of our life is the intrinsically enlightened life, difficult to see. How do you practice most effectively in order to realize this? It is not a matter of whether you should practice shikantaza or koans, but rather how to practice effectively. When you work on koan, is there an awareness of I am doing koan? When you sit shikantaza, is there an awareness of I am doing shikantaza? This is so you need to take care of this I. When you work on koan, be koan. When you sit shikantaza, be shikantaza. Let your practice of koan or shikantaza be the zazen of the Buddhas. Simply don't let yourself and Buddha be separate. Don't separate yourself from koan and yourself from shikantaza. Don't discriminate between yourself and Buddha, between your life and the intrinsically enlightened life. Sit in this way. So, I like the koan where a Jesuit, and this comes back to my Catholic upbringing, was studying Zen with a Zen master. And the Jesuit said, when I'm sitting, there's this feeling of struggle. It's like there's me and there's God, and there's always this duality between us, and I'm trying to be, but there's a struggle. And the Zen master said, soon there will be just yourself. The priest said, I would rather there be just God. The Zen master said, exactly what I said, Father. So that's a little bit, maybe just sitting. I think it has this quality to it. That's indescribable. Also had some places that I marked in Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, that I thought talked on the same theme. In a sense, this is the same theme that Barbara addressed yesterday. And when you sit, you should be sit without being disturbed by your painful legs or sleepiness. This is zazen. But at first it is very difficult to accept things as they are. You will be annoyed by the feeling that you have in your practice. When you can do everything, whether it's good or bad, without disturbance or without being annoyed by the feeling, That is actually what we mean by form is form and emptiness is emptiness. The single-minded way section is pretty much the same theme. He talks about a single-minded way. Even if the sun were to rise from the west, the bodhisattva has only one way. If you want to express yourself, your true nature, there should be some natural and appropriate way of expressing. Even spraying left and right as you sit down or get up from the zen is an expression of yourself. It is not preparation or practice or relaxation or practice. It is part of the practice. So we should not do it as if we were preparing for something else. That should be true in your everyday life. To cook, to fix some food is not preparation. It is practice. This bodhisattva's way is called the single-minded way, or the railroad track, thousands of miles long. The railroad track is always the same. If it were to become wider or narrower, it would be disastrous. Wherever you go, the railroad track is always the same. This is the bodhisattva's way. We say railroad track, but actually there is no such thing. Sincerity itself is the railroad track. The sights we see from the train will change, but we're always running on the same track. There's no beginning or no end to the track, beginningless or endless track. There's no starting point, no goal, nothing to attain. Just to run on the track is our way. This is the nature of our Zen practice. But when you become curious about the track, danger is there. You should not see the railroad track. If you look at the railroad track, you will become dizzy. Just appreciate the sights you see from the train. That is our way. So my struggle is sort of trying to appreciate sitting and having faith that it's Buddha's practice. And if I'm good, I'll make it Dogen sitting, because I've been sitting according to Dogen's instructions as best I can recently. But there's always this falling off and getting back on and this feeling of disturbance and pushing myself. And I guess the only remedy I have is the physical posture, to try to straighten and come back to the body. But that gets into, you know, what am I slipping into? This ego, this thing that seems to appear and disappear, is something that I've been thinking about for some time, and like 30 years or more. So one quote about ego that I found is that according to the traditional Buddhist understanding, our human nature is without ego. When we have no idea of ego, we have Buddha's view of life. Our egoistic ideas are delusion, covering our Buddha nature. We are always creating and following them and repeating this process over and over again. Our life becomes completely occupied by egocentric ideas. This is called the karmic life or karma. The Buddhist life should not be karmic life. The purpose of our practice is to cut off the karmic experience, spinning mind. So that brings to mind, you know, the question of where each of us and where I am in my practice. And I know that if I'm disturbed in any one of a variety of ways, I'll react, and there'll be something from the unconscious that'll determine how I react, whether I'm happy or whether I'm sad, unhappy, unsettled, is egocentric in a sense. And the thinking is, of course, egocentric, and the comparison is egocentric. But yet there's the experience of actually sitting and sitting without ego, without apparent ego. The other two books that I wanted to mention briefly, which might be of interest, are one is called The Soul's Code. And it's by James Hillman, who's a prominent Jungian psychologist. And it's subtitled The Character and Calling. And his thesis is that we're born inheriting not just the nature and nurture, not just the genome and the care of your parents and so on, but some kind of a genius that's our maybe true self, original self would be the closest in Buddhist terms to that. But there is some true nature there. And for me, it's very different from Jungian conventionally, although Jung is closer to that than Freud. So it's a very different feeling. And also the use of the soul is a different feeling. The soul is maybe very close to the self in some sense. But he cites all the unusual characters, the ones you know about in terms of movies and sports and politics, as well as authors, the geniuses, and shows that on an anecdotal basis and also in terms of studies of identical twins and non-identical twins, that they exhibited their uniqueness, their genius, early in their lives, and that this stayed with them. This last chapter is called, forget the word, I think it's something like mundaneness or mediocrity. And he means by that the rest of us. And his basic thesis in that is that those who are, you know, given to overt recognition as genius, as our insanely great friend Steve Jobs was, express their daemon, the acorn, the core of their genius, in ordinary and ordinary matter, such as cooking and sweeping, taking care of the ordinary. The reincarnation is another interesting question in terms of that identification. Another recent book that I wanted to mention is one called Beauty and the Soul. And it's by an Italian author whose name I can't come up with, but the essence of this is that beauty itself, beauty in our lives, beauty in nature, beauty all around us, beauty in expression of people, beauty in relationships, is what sort of feeds our soul and our lives, gives meaning to it. He talks about aesthetic intelligence, and it's very clear to me that this is something I'm learning, but that some people who are artists by nature or by nurture or some combination of the two may have inbuilt in them, and that we tend to specialize maybe in different forms. Emotional intelligence is another. I think that I see clearly exhibited in some people and not in myself. So there are various forms of intelligence, I think, that somehow get reincarnated. In this book on beauty and intelligence, he also cites some interesting questions like, do you really want to be here? This is a question that he asked many people in his therapy experience. And depending on their a lot of it highly correlated with aesthetic intelligence, with appreciation of beauty, appreciation of things in life. There's a rich correlation between the two. So the last few lines that I wrote out is that Zazen, or this process of seeing sesshins, is actually in some sense redesigning the spine and the nervous system, or reforming it maybe, bringing it back to what it was. The Zen is the self, selfing itself, in Nichiren Roshi's famous expression. In Koban's, you must disappear on your cushion. It is the only way. He went on the same newsletter that Michael wrote, that's what I'm quoting, and I think most of you are familiar with it, but said that the sense of self-recognition, of maintaining an eye in your zazen, back and forth, is kind of a pathological thing in zazen. Or there's an expression, don't look at the tracks, you might get dizzy. Don't try to understand all this. The other the other things that I've mentioned are some things that I come back with too. Sherry Huber's pay attention, believe nothing, and don't take it personally. That's one. Tilopa's advice, which winds up when just relax and rest right now. Don't try to figure out anything. Don't try to make anything happen. Let go of the past. Let go of the present. Let go of the future. So I think I'm sorry that this is, there's no clear focus, and I don't have much more to add, so I'll hopefully ask for questions and comments. How is sesshin for you? I thought also that we could take the stick and pass it. If no one had any questions.
I don't have the stick here.
Maybe I'll take the recorder and pass it.
I have one question. You brought up the topic of Shikantaza, and we haven't really, we've talked around Shikantaza so far, but we haven't really talked about it. I don't know if we can talk about it. Should we try to talk about it?
Please.
What is Shikantaza? What's your understanding of Shikantaza?
Just sitting. Maybe sitting without ego too, honestly.
Does anyone else have a thought? Shikantaza? Sometimes the activity of meditation is called focus, and sometimes it's called inclusion. Like we have an object of meditation or a focus of meditation. Usually beginning meditation would say just be aware of your posture, your location, place. Beginning instruction might say follow your breath, or be aware of your breath, be aware of inhalation and exhalation or something like that. Or there could be other objects of focus. So that's one way to focus, to come back to something, to come back, kind of like a puppy that's being trained to you know, not be on the floor or something like, you know, just to come back. Don't, you know, don't do that. Don't come back home. Or behave, you know. Or wait.
These are like pieces of newspaper.
But then there's when you're settled to some degree, you can. A practitioner can focus actually by not focusing, by inclusion. So every thing that's noticed, every noticing, let's say, is included. So there's a awareness of inhalation. Then there's a flickering of a thought, then a sensation in your body, then you hear a blue jay, then there's a little light, a little difference in the light on the wall, and then you remember a breath, and then you follow a thought for a while. But throughout all that process might feel like you're lost. But actually, can there be a sense of, in practice, of all that being focus, in a sense, like all that being included in the way, in practice? Do you think so? Does anyone think so?
I think so. And I was thinking of Cliff brought up faith, and I remember kind of arguing with Kevin. He said that faith was essential, and I said I wished I had that, and he pretty much said, "Well, too bad for you." I think I was being dramatic, but. I think that's the faith that what I'm doing here, and that everything that is experienced by me and experiencing me, however it
is practice.
Is practice.
Yeah.
Is she?
That everything's available to you, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it feels right now to me, sitting here, it feels almost like my spine. The faith.
Some people sort of put Christianity aside, have trouble with faith.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I have trouble with that word too, because it's so Christian and mm-hmm. it brings back some difficult memories. Mm-hmm. But I like the word trust. I have absolute trust or confidence that it's all here, that it's all. That, like you said, you're Buddha, you're Buddhist, you're sitting as Buddha, simultaneously, like Dogen said, simultaneously you sit with Buddha as Buddha. So is that chicken taza, that everything's included?
That maybe sounds, I'm not sure. I think so, but now that I'm thinking of it, you know, the explanation of it, it's it's like an arrow shooting and hitting, or 2 hours meeting.
And
Yeah, that sounds more active than just a generalized awareness. Yeah, that everything is...
Yeah. You hit.
Yeah.
Ta za. Za is sit. Like the za of zazen. Ta za hits it. And shikan is... How do you translate it, Jiro?
I forget every time. I have to look him up.
Just or only for itself?
Only for itself.
Right, only for itself.
I seized on the word active. He said it's an active feeling. At least my sitting is not, never, just sitting is not static. It's ongoing, changing. I wanted to read something from Thich Nhat Hanh. In fact, I put up a whole bunch of selections from Thich Nhat Hanh, but observing the body and the body, thinking of the four foundations of mindfulness, and body in the body, and the feelings within the feelings, and the mind within the mind. Anyway, he says, means that in the process of observing, we do not stand outside our own body as if we are an independent observer, but we identify ourselves 100% with the object being observed. This is the only path that can lead us to the penetration and direct experience of reality. In observing, in observation, meditation, the body and mind are one entity. The subject and object of meditation are the one entity also. There is no sword of discrimination that slices reality into many parts. The meditator is a fully engaged participant. I think that's what you said.
I'd like to take a shot at this Taza thing. So, in my understanding of it, when I looked it up and saw what I saw, was is sitting for the sake of sitting, kind of like Ars gratia artis, art for art's sake. Yeah. So, sitting for the sake of just sitting would be sitting for the sake of just sitting. And that when we come to the cushion, we might bring a lot of baggage and a lot of stories. And I think one of the things that we do is we sit, and we don't just sit for the sake of sitting. We sit and we think and we process, and things arise and they come up, because just like that motorcycle has a tremendous amount of momentum, if suddenly it came upon a wall, that would be a disaster. So we kind of have a disaster for a while, like you were saying, for a couple of days, because we have the momentum of our story and our expression and our life and our worries and wants and needs and desires, and suddenly we're forced, stopped, staring at the wall. So everything comes to a stop. But it doesn't. There's tremendous momentum still happening of story and wants, needs, desires, all of this mental stuff going on. And as you were saying, Cliff, when you focus on the posture, and Michael adjusted my posture, it was incredible after that. And you get to this point of where, or what I would experience, where the story stops, and I'm not processing any more of my story, and I'm not pushing anything away, but I'm not clinging to anything, and everything becomes inclusive. The bird sounds, everybody's sounds. All of that is inclusive, maybe an arising of a thought, and then the thought passes. And then suddenly this holds itself, the posture holds itself, and it's just solid. And then body just drops off, and mind and body just drop off. And then there's just this sitting happening without, and without knees, no, there's just this dropping of everything. But everything is still there. Everything is still happening. So that's my experience of it. When I feel it's just doing itself, Zazen is doing itself, and me, as far as Robert and Robert's stories, are no longer present in that equation. That just drops off.
There. Well, I wanted to talk about Shikantaza too, and just this thought. Shishins really suck. And they're a problem to get through. And a 40-minute sit a lot of times is a real challenge. And yet in that, you get an opportunity to navigate each moment, each breath, through the till that damn bell rings. And I think the right now for me, the Shikantaza is a navigating process of all the things that has been talked about, all the distractions and pain and storylines, how to navigate through that is what we practice in Zazen anyway. Or I get to practice it, and each time it's different. Why are you getting into the same posture again and again, and it's different? I mean, maybe some of the pains are similar, or the sleepinesses are similar, but still, there's something slightly different.
In listening to everyone speak, I'm still getting the sense that there's all this muck, and then there's Shikantaza, and there's something pure that we're navigating toward. It's there, struggling. But this is it. The stories, the muck. I was really caught by one thing that you said at the very beginning, and I'm kind of there. It's been there through most of our being together. And that was when you talked about Maizumi Roshi, mm-hmm. and that he was an alcoholic. Mm-hmm. And there was some question about how he could have influenced.
I think
that he influenced so many people, or that he was a teacher just to so many. And I kind of just found myself pausing at that place in your...
Chogyam Trungpa also comes to mind.
Yeah. And one of the things that we've been talking about is this transmission of light. Mm-hmm. And all of us being teachers. And this
is the Sanskrit word for faith, but it's usually translated as wholeheartedness, mm-hmm. or instant response. Yeah. You just respond, When your hair's on fire, they say, put it out. That's actually from the Sanskrit tradition, the etymology. That's the definition of faith, rather than belief in something outside. Mm-hmm. So, It's not so much in the request has a name or a substance, but it's actually that it's functioning. That you're here, I'm here. Mm-hmm. We've come here. We've come together to inquire or to just stop. You could say to stop for a while, see, and that is enough. We're actually those who are willing to stop for a while and see. That's shamatha vipassana, stopping and seeing.